This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. Tonight's program features two poets, Sonoma County's own Ed Coletti and Arisa White, a young woman recently nominated for an NAACP Image Award in Literary Achievement. And I have a feeling we'll have time to throw in a couple of other things too, so stay tuned. First up is Ed Coletti. Many of us in Sonoma County know Ed for the work he did in creating and running the former SoCoCo and Poetry Azul reading series. They were always lively events and brought in many local poets, as well as poets from throughout the San Francisco Bay Area. His own work appears in various places, including an anthology of Italian-American poets, Avanti Popolo, published by Manic D. Press. Several chapbooks, the most recent of which is Jazz Gods, published by his own generous effort, Round Barn Press, and his first full-length collection, When Hearts Outlive Minds, which came out in 2011 from Conflux Press. This is the book from which Ed will read tonight. Lynn Knight, the author of four poetry collections, says, "In When Hearts Outlive Minds, a beautiful and beautifully apt title, Ed Coletti writes through the pain of his father's decline and death about the passage of time. Loss in all its aspects is keenly felt here. Yet, Coletti manages to find joy in mortality, in the red of a finch, or in the heart itself." Anselm Berrigan, a former director of the Poetry Project at St. Mark's Church in New York, and author of five books, says Coletti's poems flex a direct, wry, sad, easygoing, and lived music, firmly rooted in the present as continuous moment the heart-mind writes from, even, or especially, when memory and its range of pressures get into the picture. They go right to the gut of the matter, tender and tough at turns. I'm so pleased to present to you now, Ed Coletti.
Well, hi, Catherine. Hi, KRCB audience. It's a pleasure to be here today to read from my book, When Hearts Outlive Minds. Before I read from the book, I would like to read a few poems from projects I'm currently working on. And of late, I've been experimenting once again with employing poetic forms as a bit of diversion from free verse. As with the poets of yore, I'm rediscovering that when I don the restriction of a form, paradoxically, my soul is freed to share its content, and sometimes humorously. So today I'm going to read three triolets. And the triolet form isn't something that's familiar to everybody, but it's approximately 13th century French, similar to the rondeau. It was briefly popularized again by Robert Bridges at the turn of the century and lends itself nicely to humor, among other things. So first of all, Triolet on Time. This is being published in the New Formalist Review, where I'm going to be the featured poem during September of 2012. Triolet on Time. "For boys add to their woe by sitting still" was the best line of my youthful poem. Now age and illness ask again, why will such boys add to their woe by sitting still? You'd think of this, they'd had their awful fill, and dreaming dreams of life, they'd finally sow them. "For boys add to their woe by sitting still" was the best line of my youthful poem. This is the triolet of the critical loser. "Stick to painting, I don't like your poems," averred Cowboy Bob, who I'd beaten in chess. Perhaps he feared lofty emotions. "Stick to painting, I don't like your poems." More difficult work beyond his knowing. Give him Kipling, McEwen, Edgar Guest. "Stick to painting, I don't like your poems," averred Cowboy Bob, who I'd beaten in chess. Okay, here's a love poem, a triolet from a line by Eric Clapton. My darling, you look wonderful tonight. Your short silver hair, shining opal eyes. When I see you smiling, everything feels right. My darling, you look wonderful tonight. The thought of your passing's terrible fright. Loss of part of me, joy and wisdom dies. My darling, you look wonderful tonight. Your short silver hair, shining opal eyes. So another project that I'm working on is movie title poems. I've been tacking movie titles onto poems I'm writing, and they really have nothing to do with the content of the poem for the most part. Anyway, movie title poem number 30, Raising Arizona. Had Albert Einstein ever a huge Einsteinian term, been a metaphysical word, asked for nicer than stripped of his citizenship papers by a cop on the beat in Phoenix. Had he ever, that word again, visited Arizona, he might have run away due to his experience that laws do not matter, let's pass on this word for now, run through a constricted portal of antimatter, okay, I've dealt with matter, back to Nazi Germany. Or had Martin Luther King been asked, and here I've got a winking emoticon, or had Martin Luther King been asked for his travel papers back in 1960s Atlanta, his escape would have been to the apartheid of South Africa, or there being many other familiar choices to similar venues, Rhodesia, Selma, or even through Einstein's No Time Affair machine to Victorian pre-Gandhi India. Any valuable, swarthy-skinned man or woman asked for papers in the state of Arizona will feel stuck in the gadget's pinching tunnel, like a salmon caught in a 3-inch pipe, head out and pointed in the worst possible direction. Movie title poem number 8. Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead. Yes, it's a real movie title. Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead. Dead at last, dead at last. Great God Almighty, I'm dead at last. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. So what am I doing here in, of all places, Denver, Colorado? Is it that I've reached my pike's nadir, or that death is defined by those lamentable Broncos with their most Christian quarterback, Tim Tebow, who makes a play, takes a knee? Or am I purely Rocky Mountain high, not dead at all, merely hallucinating about what to do here in the mile-high city, as remote from life as ever so distant Denver Irrational Airport? If you haven't been to Denver recently or in the last 10 or so years, the airport is extremely far from the city. Okay, now to my book, When Hearts Outlive Minds. The genesis of the title, I asked my cardiac nurse wife, Joyce, why she thought we were seeing so much dementia and Alzheimer's. And she said, we've done a really good job saving hearts, but not so good with brains. So this book is dedicated to Joyce, who teaches me about hearts. And the first poem that I'll read is, I Thought Again of Jacob Kahn. It begins with an epigraph from Chaim Potok, from his novel, My Name is Asher Lev. Then I thought again of Jacob Kahn, and again I wondered, do we all get old and sick so quickly? Then there is almost no time left at all. Do you hear the pain carried in the wind? It is the cry of wasted lives. Who dares add to that cry? Who dares drain the world of its light? I thought again of Jacob Kahn. Being wheeled when wheeling long ago had such a free turning sound to it. The breeze, the wheels that wings lift over wind. But here today I am cargo, transported to still another clinic, a depot which may send me further on, the difference being I don't know where I'm going. Just months ago, not long before his death, my father's face topped this image, I doing the pushing, he offering his dependence. But from my transported perspective, such trust implies surrender, which according to Eastern philosophy sort of is the goal. Here today, though, being transported, I do not find yielding to be at all agreeable. My mind has so ever much more to consider, paintings to be painted, poems to be written, about so many things in illusory time, and all about finches, red-headed paradise finches, observed darting, suspended by me. But I do not affect little birds, except perhaps when I frighten them. Finches are not suspended by me. Birds do not dart by such cause. I ain't their puppeteer. Yet I mustn't waste an instant, even when I begin or terminate feeling so numbingly tired. I need to remember to write, to edit. While much of this I'll cut to shard, the red-headed paradise finches must remain intact, in touch with all that nests herein. One finch burned red into both my retinas, flitted about such corneas as laid like ice in wait. When a paradise finch clicks into material lenses, pollinating sight with cochineal dust, such stuff of vivid fairies, I, along with Jacob Kahn, hold little tolerance for wasting any detritus that once discovered turns glorious when we ourselves take wing. Now, the first poem that I read from the book mentions my father, so I'll make sure to make the last poem that I read also mention my father. Next poem appeared in Zisava, and I wasn't going to read it today, but then last week we learned that a black American man was with an IQ of 61 was executed in Texas. Last Suppers in Texas, George W. Bush Governor, 1995 to 2000. Chili dogs, baked beans, corn and coffee, January 31st, 1995. Clifton Russell Jr., who stabbed and crushed skull of Hubert Toby in a robbery, thanks friends and family. Steak, fries, beans, water. December 7th, 1995. Hai Wong, who shot dead Hien Quang Tron and Tian Van Nguyen during a row. Final words, praise the Lord, praise Jesus, hallelujah. Pepperoni pizza, Dr. Pepper. February 10th, 1997. Richard Brimage, who raped and strangled student Cindy Rausenal. Tell Mama I love her. Butter beans, mashed potatoes, onions, chocolate cake. April 18th, 1997. Kenneth Gentry, who shot dead Jimmy Ham while on run from jail. Sweet Jesus, here I come. Take me home. I'm going your way. Cheeseburgers, onion rings, cheesecake, root beer. January 31st, 1995. Willie Williams, who shot Claude Schaefer Jr. during 1989 robbery on a delicatessen. Final words, there's love and peace in Islam. Robert Madden, May 28th, 1997, who shot and stabbed two men, give my dinner to a homeless dude, make him whatever he likes. This request was denied. This bag she carries. She knows she doesn't need it with her, this invisible bag of melancholy she shoulders everywhere she goes. Today, for example, she could have left it home with its weight of canned food, poetry books, an accordion, old love letters, photos of her children, bottles of medication, lists of things to do, maps of places she's been and hasn't, partially hidden lives of street beggars, relatives living and dead, slights and insults, delivered and received, religious tracts, wallet-sized paintings of the martyrs, long dulled halos and broken wings. If it were not this sack she carries slung, it inevitably would be another, no matter how bright the day, how sweet the fragrance, how much she does or doesn't, how much she rests, how much she loves, how lilting the song, how wondrous she tells herself she is or is told she is, under and over the sky, she remains weighted about her torso by the unremitting contents of this overspilling burden, visible or not. I'm not going to comment on every poem. Some don't need an introduction. So, moving to higher ground. Propelled like Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, when all commences with that mound of mashed potatoes resembling Devil's Tower National Monument, we instead notice ourselves in Marin County, atop Mount Tamalpais, where some of us begin toppling from the crowded summit too many of us have surmounted all at once. But you crazed, beloved gods, you are the mountain. How, gods, can you fall from what you are? It's impossible, exclaims Kerouac, who in that flash realizes. It's impossible to fall off mountains, and he adds, you fool, because even, or especially gods, lose their tempers. Eric Burdon's Animals and the Kinks espouse the freedom, even the impudence, to fail. It's your life. You can do what you want. Even fall off mountains, if that's what you do. And it appears to be a long time. Did Crosby or Stills ever begin to imagine how genuinely short, actually non-existent, time really is? I bet they've begun to realize, they're my age, after all. The dawning of the age of Aquarius, sun rising from beneath the covers of our long imagined deathbeds, all of our beds, circling wagons, the big difference being that now, at our age, the Miwoks join us, and without Custer, in ascending, sans invitation, this unaccustomed, ever higher ground. Okay, when my wife Joyce was having difficulty trying to juggle all the responsibility of a father in dementia and many other things, I had this thought and wrote this poem for her. It's a short poem that also appeared in the Lilliput Review called Simply Read a Book. Why prune the garden? Why attend your father? Why not simply read a book, my love? Leave the laundry basketed. Tell me when you're hungry. Call me for a cry. Why not simply read a book, my love? The flowers still will grow. And that other short one that I promised, where I can end, literally end, with my father, befriending death. As with death himself, I too sit close to my father, death all too close. I breathe hot to his cold. Jealous, we must share, my father, me exhaling, death inhaling, No contest, just a rhythm. Thank you all very much. Thank you, Catherine.
And that was Ed Colletti reading from his latest collection, When Hearts Outlive Minds. If you haven't seen this beautiful book, I know that Copperfields in Montgomery Village in Santa Rosa has a couple of copies on their shelves. Okay, up next is Arisa White. She is the author of Hurrah's Nest. This is her debut collection, recently nominated for an NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Literary Work in Poetry. And she's also the author of A Penny Saved, released in November of 2012. White is a Kaveh Khanum Fellow and an MFA graduate from the University of Massachusetts, Amherst, recipient of the inaugural Rose O'Neill Literary House Summer Residency at Washington College in Maryland. Arisa has also received residencies, fellowships, or scholarships from Port Townsend Writers Conference, Squaw Valley Community of Writers, Hedgebrook, Atlantic Center for the Arts, Prague Summer Program, and the list goes on and on. She was she had a poem nominated for a Pushcart Prize in 2005, and her poetry has been published very widely. So here is Arisa White. She came up to record these poems. And if you missed her reading at the Word Temple Poetry Series in January, I'm sorry for you. It was an incredible event. But at least here now is Arisa White reading from Hurrah's Nest.
To you, named the messenger of God. I came into an extended family of boys who skinned knees and rough played. Jamar, firstborn in the weather of her womb. Ibert mourned the light that drained him from her cupula. Kayana came normal, then a tonic-clonic brewed her brain. Shaquana broke waters with six-pointed hands. Nigel arrived on the golden bell's 12th toll, and you, Uriah, wrote a love inexhaustible, inducible as Jah or art. Where her seven wonders and sins, in nights of hell she gave us ice lullabies to cool our sleep. Still I burned in the crook of her cradling, troubled by the face we share. Her voice sha-sha notes of incomplete comfort. I body myself like a kayak, and to what shore I pedal, I'm Kayana seized in epilepsy, shaken to stillness, wake to find home is her. A blue wryness colors this epiphany of hands aching for the soil of her laughter. No shaman with leaves or cowries reading godly scripts could jam such truth into my eyes. Far away we move in the strictness of her lines. Ibird in Nicaragua is pulled by her moon. In the mandolin's quiet, Nigel finds her climbing his clefts. Every good boy does fine niggles his ears. Strung by deaf fingers, her effects linger stronger than Cayenne. She's Obeya, woman's curse cast when he, a toddler, swells Ibert's neck until speech is the faded note pulled from the bottle. You liar, I write in Mother's Day cards for her missteps and neglect. Jamar picks no bones. I direct the skeletons with my pens. Shaquana with bold fonts points and shames. Far too many times we were Nigel, unsafe in boyfriend's hands, wilting while his skin rose and welts. No Jamar, no police, just the fusillade of K, the missing O's kept for salvage selves we floated away. Uriah, you do not know the wrecks, our possible flights. Ibert, from monkey bars landed with broken sky in his hands. I bent into a fetal memory, sucked the genie from my thumb. Shaquana sprinted, her arms swinging machetes. For seconds she lifted. You are an addition to this breath, listening to each shell in the way Nigel studies sound, predicting how to fill holes, tricking Kayana into falls. And for what spot soft enough, we lift the other's sadness. We jambu against collisions come low. Uriah, you are protected in Ibert's prayers. In Jamar's, Kite Shaquana's eyes, your beauty's given back. you brown in Nigel's sun-soaked scales, and we choral psalms from Kayena's water valves. It was easier to manage. I started kindergarten that fall you went off to Guyana. Granny cut off my dreadlocks. She knew how to press and curl ponytail and cornrow, but palm-rolled locks till the roots stiffened with beeswax, glistened like licorice, she didn't know. For that matter, no one in the projects knew what to do with hair left natural, left unparted and wild. They were afraid to touch that unmothered part of themselves. Each snip made each one alive and each one dead. And if you said goodbye, it was an honest whisper, short and fine in your throat. She cut my hair like a boy's who hadn't been to the barber for a month. And I sat at the cafeteria table alone for weeks. They couldn't make sense of me, my classmates with their gender-proper hairstyles. I didn't want anything to do with franks and beans, those pucks of grilled meat. I waited at lunchtime for peanut butter and jelly and was hesitant to eat bread that wasn't our color. It was hard not hearing your voice each morning throughout the day. And unwilling to correct them when they said my name wrong, I gave into the sizzling. The fried chicken crunched between my teeth. I could have bitten both of your hands for leaving me here, each finger for the gunshots that rang the night, the footsteps running on the roof, the gravel mashed deeper and deeper into my sleep. Flocks of butterflies broke my skin, and I was shattered where I stood. A whole constellation of wondering if I could throw myself to the sky, coated with urgent wishes. You'll see that I missed you, that the barter was unfair, that you mistook me for sheep. Chore. Arriving past midnight, our mother sees her messes in the sink, on floors and counters, in the bed, wakes and tells us, "I'm getting rid of you all." No humor beneath her face. Her posture doesn't soften. Half staff, she pledges her hands are done. We're a waste. Next day, we pack before leaving to eat breakfast in the school's cafeteria. "Take only what you need," she says. We place duffel bags on well-made beds. Maybe she will see yesterday was a slip. Who hears a teacher after this? Or the "she said, he said, and yes, I'll trade my chocolate milk for your white." Hanging out on the tire swing after school is a big no. Ibert's hand in mine, we cross on walk, take steps like each one a petal. Will she not? We're fresh out of flowers, and I believe her. My brothers beg, "We'll do better, promise." The elevator descends to the parking lot and rings tighten around my chest. Where a precision of sorry and sadness led to her car. We know about foster care from the news, and it's difficult keeping siblings together. Why she breaks us, I can't understand. Burst into laughter and then tells us, "Next time, I'll be serious."
This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. Let's return now to Arisa White reading from Hurrah's Nest.
Take aim. A boy bullets the sky. He doesn't notice the crowd tracking items to identify him. I name myself with him. In the trigger, our fingers strike against the days born with little separation. We are colder beneath this surviving sun of a god and goddess who birthed 10. We need the steadiness of the archer's hand before he stopped and registered the cost of each fall. We are wary children. I'm no stranger than this boy wearing a wife beater. I know the wife beater. What tundra could be worse? At 11 years old, the taste of each morning is ice, the heart's Antarctic on the tongue. From this season's primer, I've learned to shovel into a pile and wait for the blow. The Brummel forest in me curtsies when my stepfather's face takes the bullet. This is the day when women sit with legs uncrossed. No men, no need for ladylike, polishing arrows. An albatross to us both. Coney Island, Brooklyn, 1992. Known as the storm from hell, a northeaster with hurricane force winds submerges New York City under 4 feet of water. Against this, we hold our bodies taut. We wear each other like amulets against come what come may. We don't muster a hush. Our percussive living disruptive to each sound the waves carry. When they are soundless, we worry. Ibert finds $20 beneath the boardwalk. We are locked out. Our mother too busy to make keys. We stuck until evening to roam the hallway and beach. We curse her for forgetting over French fries and francs. There is wind and ocean to listen to. This is not calm. It is her voice replaced when it comes no more in the dark. You can see their circles stretched or condensed. Its movement leads back to itself over itself. I tell my brother, when you trace too hard, you leave grooves in the loose leaf. We do not sleep tonight. Mother and him are making circles. She, more so than he, will bear the imprint of his rings. We tell each other the best rides are the ones that go round. We are turning the Ferris wheel with our marathon. The amusement park down the street is closed. The winter leaves the freaks unemployed. Prostitutes stand between the arcade and Nathan's. The awnings keep them from the rain. Run, she says. Run, we do. This gray day shades her bruises. If you run with me, I promise this will change. We ferry over the Hudson. She runs with this. We run for a dawn-dusted lie. Swelling the streets since morning, the Atlantic bullies the curbs. Where are you? The bus cannot drive through these rivers. I tread the avenues to the apartment we left days ago. In its rooms I return to find not you. From the door ajar I call between wind and water adrift. If this remained home, we would be eating ramen in school uniforms. This storm's an albatross to us both. Coney Island drowns, open-mouthed clowns not quick to bust their balloons. Heavy with the silk of this sea, out of this hurrah's nest my legs oar. The temper of these clouds cannot knife our anti-Gallican hitch. The subway predicts me something. You, a neon buoy in the ill-lit still well, waiting for the water to bring me in. If yes, the down and Afghan of their love could have sent my guards to lunch. I've never seen them pull close into pits of the body to feel heat called up by the presence of each other near. No hand on back smooths down her shirt until hankering for skin rips away cotton, and he is fingers in dirt making sustenance from storm clouds and patience. No laughter, because her laughter catches in his teeth, and he, to show gratitude for something good and right, gives it back the way she gave it. No kisses to lay an unborn talk on each other's tongue. No stepping away mute until their mouths learn to walk again. Tenderized. Oh, we fear our enemy's minds, the shape in his thought that resembles the cripple in our own, for it's not just his fear, but his love and his paradise. Rebecca Seiferly. I fear it all. The fresh morning distilled to imported backwash, the humidity sleep leaves on the scalp, his hands mastering me into a ring of breath. In the pearl flesh of her young woman, my mother worked minutes into making these lungs that can bagpipe for air, but I don't. The herd of myself wrangled to a waterhole, stationed on hooves with God-given stripes to come close to the embarrassing curtsy of words. I offer myself like one of the carved tchotchkes on the mantle. For the ways I imagined myself vicious, they're as inanimate as carnival prizes. I barter my sentinels, concede myself as my mother does to his aggression. We share more than this face given to the same expression when speech is strangled. I see the subterfuge of her carapace, not only now, even then in that Polaroid, the 70s, dressed in navy red rugby dungarees, complacent her grin. I once wanted to step into that picture, she I thought beautiful with the hunger of a beloved child. And like her childhood friends who see her in me, he hurts me in ways familiar to my mother, initiates her facsimiles into this tradition of their years, meticulous cuts to leech like adolescent clits on the heart. Jumped. Your eyes are as quiet as my feet. We both are whispers to each other. You are the most focus I've ever seen you. No. You're this way during mornings while we wait for the school bus, holding yourself like the flame to the stick's end. You are here, 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 until the yellow doors shut. I want to think you are blessed with forgetting. You know, he didn't smile. She brought him home with little introduction. We sat in the room painted evening sky watching TV. Remember, he mouthed hello. Didn't bring a suitcase, but the linoleum held up his. Closets opened to his. Air clung to his. He locked the door with his set of keys. I was afraid to take you to the beach. We lived near Coney Island, near the ocean. I thought, run in. That is where we lived, in the duplex apartment with the mermaid in our address. We threw laundry bags down the steps. I see the clean whiteness of them in the dim hallway as headlights, your eyes wide. Saliva glints like fishing hook in your cheek. Heard keys in the door, you a pig before slaughter. He drags you down the steps. The more you shout, the more he hits. Sorry, you manage over again until you are beaten. I watch your sleep whimper, your face welt. Remember, together into the arms of those little boys. You climbed into the bedroom window and the guard falls out. On the ledge, you test the air with your toe. You think they invite you to play to pour into the sky. On three, your hand in mine, those boys like weeds on our thigh, the sun's warm, the concrete salted like boardwalk. In the grip of dirt. They say an oak has the desire to be an oak when housed in the grip of dirt, it dares itself to grow. I feel that seed in me. Some ghosts balance along your curbs, at the foot of your queen, kneel by your bathtub, cold hands and loofah rub, touch raw until breath comes out in baby steps. Walks the thrash in shameful rooms with mirrors and scales that show you of no wood. When the therapist asks how I feel, my statements toddle. My emotional arithmetic is basic. I'm sad. That admission brings buzzards close. My empty hands petition for the angel left in the snow when I was six. Every shoelace snapped in a rush. The fried chicken that drove my mother into the next burrow when our mouths were one. The cat that refused to be leashed, but I dragged her and her will remained unsuffocated. I tire of coming across thirsty saplings. Let this nest on whatever station when the knob turns the heart. Listen to the celloist serenading symmetry. Between her breasts, the curtain parts in your dream tonight. What is bandage for loss? Stillness is long hole from sugar cube to ant hill, like each hair, antennae to the oak's will to grow. What is it we burn into our hearts? The Guyanese woman putting obeya on Kayana. She was someone to blame. The truth was too much for Nisi to share, she said. Well, when Iber and Kayana were little, we went to Kayana and the weather was so hot. Time goes by and there's no witch revenging her daughter's broken heart. No record-breaking Guyanese summer, countryside shack, or sweet treats brought to the American and her two American children. It's you, enamored with a sister, asleep in the bassinet beside the bed. It's summer in Brooklyn. We're living on Fulton Street in the apartment with concrete floors. Kayana is fresh life, months old. Nisi's in the kitchen and you are quiet, knowing to hold her soft. Never once did our mother make you feel what you've forgotten, let you walk across the bridge that links you to the lesion on Kayana's brain. 2 years old, you didn't know any better. Many times I wish Kayana normal. If she wasn't that way, there would have been room for me to dance after school, be in band, hang out longer at the handball court with friends, chat the streetlights on. Imagine running to beat the setting sun. The panic of not making it home on time charges the pump in your legs. I know there's more you want it to do, but that's the loss of one gesture. Somehow you're never forgiven for errors, never without the suffering, delayed like Kayana who cannot count beyond 10. And for your strides, thinking a different outcome each time, she'll stand there pooling spit. She is yours. She is ours. This is the pretty from the domino's fall. There are lessons I want to skip, move in the world so I don't unstitch or freeze another's heart, come and go scentless. I wasn't alive with my elbows pulled to my ribs. We've taken on wrong narratives about ourselves to avoid wearing our hurt. Grief is a numbing heirloom. One pearl at a time, brother. I'm uncovering and reminding myself this is what I'm doing. I'm bound to get off track, tell myself I'm not worth it. It's all I know. So I'm uncovering to the grain, to a mindful way to love.
This is Catherine Hastings. You have been listening to Arisa White, that's A-R-I-S-A White, reading from her first collection of poems, Hurrah's Nest. This is the book that was nominated for an NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Literary Work in Poetry. She has a second book out called A Penny Saved that was released at the end of 2012. So I hope you enjoyed that reading. I think she's pretty phenomenal. We have time left, so I'm going to pop in some more poetry here before the end of the show. Bruce Snyder paid a visit to Sonoma County last year to read from his book, Paradise, Indiana. I've already aired that show, but I had him record a few extra poems that I didn't air yet. So here they are now. Here are three poems, including the title poem, from Paradise, Indiana, read by Bruce Snyder.
Paradise, Indiana. Some nights the streets divided me like one of those snowy Indiana towns with names like Paradise or Liberty, the Kankakee sweeping its icy waters past the winter carnival rising into the dark. This was the stuff they claimed God made us for, the whole town rumbling with the smell of sweet ribs, the slaughterhouse sprawling under angels with plastic wings, a blow-up Santa. Crowds gathered at the ticket booth, a hog turning on its spit. My father coughed a lit camel through the cracked window, Mom in the front seat, the whole car shaking as they fought near the barbecue pit, love unfolding its smoke and ash. It never ended, that road back home, past the Church of God where the preacher said we'd one day rise, whole-bodied into the sky. The graveyard frozen thick with children from the cholera epidemic of 1906. I could feel the sky crush down on me in the dead of winter. But some mornings the fields were so vast in their whiteness that the silos towered like the future, ice-caked and glistening. I'd put my frozen hands in my pockets to keep them warm, or watch my parents walking arm in arm past the Nativity with its baby Jesus, twice stolen, now nailed to the manger, his cracked halo painted so yellow it could be, if seen from a distance, polished gold. The Smoke. Past houses, past pickers and bone cleaners, rats and carrion birds, alley cats clawing out fish heads from the trash, the smoke rose, a black river shivering. It rose past Cherubusco and Wawasee, Goose Lake and Big Cedar, past the steer calf grinding its bud teeth, and the dogs that stopped barking to sniff the air. As it traveled, it carried the boy who started it all, flames climbing his sleeve to his collar to the baseball cap dazzling now on his head. It carried his screams past the gutted warehouse, past Max's metal, iron, and scrap. It rose into combines filling the dead machines. One hair at a time, it rose with his waxen face, eyes and skin spilling into weather, fields, crops, the peach trees withering, fruit darkened, maggot at the root. It rose where nothing else could, into attic crevices, into dreams of people sleeping in their beds. It blackened the steps of the Baptist church, where later the congregation would pray, for the match struck just to watch it flare in the darkness, for the way a body is lifted smoking from the grass, for the trees, how they flickered outside the window, for all that would be remembered, the dirt roads grieving, the harvest time, the sowing of the seeds, for the season they knew would follow through autumn's blazing maples, through the poplar and ash. The Afterlife of Roadkill. See the brown mutt bleed through its garland of burrs, a torn possum drooling dried streaks of foam, lice-flecked raccoons on the yellow line split wide. See how holy they open to us in death, to the moon, to the red elm scabbed with mites. They open to riverbeds and the song of the wren, to flowering plums and the barbed wire fence. Over and over, they open to carrion birds, catching scent, beginning to rise. Even their skulls, picked clean, look upwards, knowing nothing of their missing eyes.
That was Bruce Snyder reading from Paradise, Indiana. Someone's been asking me, what happened to the musical interlude? So let's go to a musical interlude right now before I give you a few announcements. Now, you may know that the San Francisco Jazz Center recently opened, and this is a very exciting thing in the San Francisco Bay Area. So in commemoration of that, here is the best jazz singer, Billie Holiday, and then we'll be right back.
Good morning, honey. you old gloomy sight. Good morning, heartache. Thought we said goodbye last night. I turned and tossed until it seemed you had gone. But here you are with the dawn. Wish I'd forget you, but you're here to stay. It seems I met you when my love went away. Now every day I start by saying to you, good morning, heartache, what's new? Stop haunting me now. Can't shake you no how. Just leave me alone. I've got those Monday blues, straight through Sunday blues. Good morning, heartache. Here we go again. Good morning, heartache. You're the one who knew me when. Might as well get used to you hanging around. Good morning, heartache, sit down. Sunday blues, straight through Sunday blues. Good morning, heartache, here we go again. Good morning, heartache, you're the one who knew me when. Might as well get used to you hanging around. Good morning, heartache. Sit down.
All right, I hope you enjoyed Billie Holiday as much as I did. Now for a couple of announcements. The Big Read, Sonoma County, is funded in part by The Big Read, a program of the National Endowment for the Arts in partnership with Arts Midwest. It's designed to encourage our American culture to read. Every year, KRCB North Bay Public Media and the Sonoma County Library select a book from the list provided by the National Endowment for the Arts for our local Big Read. In Sonoma County, the traditional month is March. In addition to theatrical events, library, and community-sponsored reading groups, Big Read Sonoma County features a variety of programs designed to appeal to as broad a population as possible, with a particular focus on what the NEA calls reluctant readers. What makes Big Read Sonoma County so unique is that the community participates in designing many of the events and programs that occur in the month of March. Funding is made available through a competitive grant process to help defray any costs in the planning and delivery of this project. So in March of this year, Big Read Sonoma County, the book selection is The Poetry of Emily Dickinson. Yay! We've already located an actress to perform The Belle of Amherst, who has also written a book about Emily Dickinson's life. And there are all kinds of events going on. So I want to encourage you to go to krcb.org to check out all of the events that will take place in March for the Big Read Sonoma County. Considered by many to be the spiritual mother of American poetry, Emily Dickinson was one of the most prolific and innovative poets of her time. She was well known, of course, for her reclusive personal life in Amherst, Massachusetts, her distinctively short lines, and what some call an eccentric approach to punctuation and capitalization. She completed over 1,700 poems in her short life. Once again, go to krcb.org to check out The Big Read and Emily Dickinson. Now, I don't usually give this much notice for a reading at the Word Temple Poetry Series at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts. However, this is such a huge event, I want you to make sure to mark it down on your calendars now. On Saturday, April 13th at 7 p.m., at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts, 282 High Street in Sebastopol, we will be celebrating a rare appearance by Kjell Espmark from Sweden. Espmark is a poet, novelist, and literary historian. He is also a former professor in comparative literature at the University of Stockholm. He's been a member of the Swedish Academy since 1981, and since 1988 he has been a member of the Nobel Committee and served as chairman from 1988 to 2004. He has been awarded a number of prizes, including the Bellman Prize for Poetry and the Shook Prize for Literary Criticism. His most recent awards include the Kellgren Prize, the Great Prize of Danio, and the Transtromer Prize. Espmark has published 13 collections of poetry. On Saturday, April 13th, he'll be reading from his most recent collection, Outside the Calendar, translated by Robin Fulton McPherson. This is an amazing event. We don't often have someone coming from Sweden to read poetry. And joining Kjell Espmark that night is none other than Dana Gioia. If you have not heard this man read his work, you must be there. Gioia is an internationally acclaimed and award-winning poet. He is the former chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts and the author of 4 collections of poetry. He is also the author of 3 books of essays, including Can Poetry Matter?, a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award. His most recent collection of poems is Pity the Beautiful, published by Grey Wolf Press in 2012. Gioia currently lectures at the University of Southern California as the Judge Whitney Professor of Poetry and Public Culture. Here's a quote from American Book Award citation. Gioia concerns himself with every aspect of his craft, its traditions, its movements toward and away from rhyme and meter, and its ancient roots in the sound of the human voice. Gioia is clearly a poet whose words are heard, whose positions ignite debate, whose work constantly and unflinchingly searches out new ways to counter what he calls our sentimental, upbeat age. So once again, that is the Word Temple Poetry Series with Kjell Espmark and Dana Gioia on Saturday, April 13th at 7 p.m. at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts, 282 High Street in Sebastopol. I want to thank all of tonight's guests again. Ed Coletti, who read from When Hearts Outlive Minds, his new book out from Conflex Press. Arisa White, who read from Hurrah's Nest. And Bruce Snyder, reading from Paradise, Indiana. And of course, I want to thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed tonight's program. If you have any comments or questions, please do get in touch with me at khastings@wordtemple.com. I'd love to hear from you. And go to wordtemple.com to check out all of the future readings at the Word Temple Poetry Series in Sebastopol. All right, it's a wrap. Thanks for listening.